Hello, everyone. My name is Andrew Torba. I'm the CEO of Gab.com, and this is Gab.com Radio. Gab is a free speech software company. We build open source software with the primary purpose of conserving and exporting the uniquely American value of free speech and First Amendment law. Our most popular product is Gab.com, which is a social network with millions of users from around the world. On Gab, the rules are simple. If it's legal speech, it's allowed. Illegal content and illegal activity is not allowed. It's really that simple. Gab also follows American privacy law in regards to protecting user data. We believe that privacy is a human right and the dignity of the sovereign individual should be respected. We don't just say these things. We actively defend these values each and every day. For example, we regularly protect the privacy of international Gab users by turning down speech-related data requests. On a regular basis, foreign governments, mainstream media propagandists, and radical activist groups attempt to censor or no-platform individuals on Gab for, quote, offensive or, quote, hateful speech. This speech is 100% protected by the First Amendment and also protected by Gab's user guidelines. We reject these requests, and in doing so, we are exporting American freedoms to people all over the world on the internet. We're also very proud of our relationship with U.S. law enforcement and the balance of due process, privacy, and free speech to keep criminal activity out of our community. For almost 4 years now, the mainstream media and the establishment players in the tyrannical Silicon Valley cabal have smeared Gab because they do not share our values. For holding the values described, Gab has faced unique challenges on our journey. We have been no platform from dozens of service providers, including both app stores, hosting providers, domain registrars, payment processors, and even banks. Here's some of the things that we've been banned from. Stripe, PayPal, Square, BitPay, Coinbase, the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store, Amazon, AWS, GoDaddy, and the list goes on and on. We've overcome these challenges by building our own infrastructure and by leveraging censorship-resistant technology like Bitcoin. The rise in the censorship of American citizens by American corporations and the subversion of democracy by these same U.S. corporations is harrowing to me, especially as a Christian. Silicon Valley companies do not share my Christian values and indeed have a consistent history of silencing Christians. Free speech is at the forefront of the 2020 election, and it should be at the forefront of every election. Twitter quickly announced that it's going to be removing the ability to like, reply, or repost President Trump's tweets that are, quote, abusive, according to their standards. They're also fact-checking the president's tweets. They're also directly removing the president's tweets. So now we have a U.S. corporation that arguably has more power than the President of the United States by mere nature of the fact that they can decide what he is allowed to say and what he is not allowed to say. I don't think this is okay, and I don't think anybody should think this is okay. This certainly isn't normal. Big tech's unchecked power to dictate who can speak, who can make money, and who can exist online is only part of the big picture. In curating and editorializing the legal political speech of American citizens and limiting the reach and engagement of the President of the United States, big tech is socially engineering the American electorate. Studies have shown that biased Google search results can swing and influence elections. Facebook has admitted to conducting psychological experiments on their users. Facebook is building a literal mind-reading device. Google is working with China to build a censored search engine. Pinterest was caught red-handed censoring pro-life and Christian content from their site. Silicon Valley's bravado has also inspired the Chinese government to project their values of censorship, communism, and control on millions of Americans. Many of the top mobile game and mobile apps are owned and controlled by the Chinese. Apps like TikTok have already censored content that criticizes the Chinese government, but not just in China. They're doing this to Americans as well. These two versions of the internet are different sides of the same tyrannical coin. the corporate or state-controlled distilled internet of Silicon Valley isn't the internet I want my daughter to grow up with. The communist, pro-China, pro-CCP version of the internet is also not the internet that I want my daughter to grow up on. This isn't the internet that people of the world deserve. Gab's products are all open source. Anyone can use our code to build their own products and transparently see how our products work. These products and communities interconnect with our community, meaning anyone can create their own social network where they own and control their own data and make their own rules while not compromising on the distribution and reach of content to a wider audience. On Gab, users are not the product. They are the customer. Gab monetizes by selling an optional service called Gab Pro. For the cost of about a cup of coffee a month, Gab Pro users can get verified and unlock additional features on the site. They also help us fund and cover operational costs without compromising and selling their user data. We also offer a free speech web browser called Dissenter that automatically blocks all big tech ads and trackers. The browser includes a universal comment section across the entire internet, so you can go on any news article, even ones that have comment sections turned off, and see what other people are saying, and also leave a comment yourself. What we need to realize is that together we vastly outnumber Silicon Valley. They only control us so long as you and I continue to allow them to do it, and I refuse to allow it any longer. So that is why I'm working to build the free speech internet, and I'd like for you to join me. I hope that this podcast offers some insight into Gab's story. In the next couple of episodes, I'm going to be telling our story from my perspective instead of through the frame of the mainstream media, which has totally misrepresented and smeared everything that we've done and everything that we've built. We've been attacked by activists, we've been attacked by the mainstream media, we've been attacked by Silicon Valley corporations for many years now. And I hope that in listening to this, you can learn why. You can learn that they fear what we are building because they do not control me and they do not control our community. And that's ultimately what, you know, they are after, is control. It's all about control and it's all about power. So I'm going to be highlighting just what happened when we started Gab and highlight what we've gone through over the period of the past 4 years. And it's a lot to unpack, but I think that it needs to be heard, because a lot of people don't realize what's going on, and a lot of people are going to experience the same thing and are now experiencing the same thing that we have gone through already. And I want to help people navigate that, and I want to help people understand why it's happening and how we can fight back against it. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. I hope you learn something. And from there, we can start building the free speech internet together. So first, I'd like to start off by explaining, you know, the start of Gab. What inspired me to start Gab? So 3 years ago, I was sitting in a coffee shop in San Francisco. I originally grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I don't come from big money. I come from a middle-class family. I'm the oldest of five kids. I grew up in a very Christian home, a very conservative home. And, you know, I had moved out to San Francisco because I wanted to start a tech company. I wanted to be a technology entrepreneur, and I had started my first company, and I had become accepted into something called Y Combinator. And Y Combinator is a Silicon Valley accelerator. Think of it like the Harvard of Silicon Valley accelerators. So an accelerator is something that invests in your company, in your startup. They give you some mentorship. They introduce you to a bunch of people. They help you get off the ground. So we had gotten accepted into Y Combinator, which is, you know, the who's who, the inner circle of inner circle in Silicon Valley. So I went from, you know, building a technology startup in Scranton, PA, and essentially being Scranton Tech myself. There was me and maybe two other companies that were doing anything really internet related out of Scranton. So I went from being, you know, kind of the center of my small town's technology and startup scene to being thrust into, you know, the headquarters of startups and of technology for the world in San Francisco and in Silicon Valley. And, you know, this had always been my dream. Growing up, I had always wanted to, you know, be a technology entrepreneur. You know, I watched the movie Pirates of Silicon Valley in eighth grade, which is the story of Bill Gates versus Steve Jobs. And this just really, you know, lit a spark in my mind. And, you know, I said, I want to do this. I want to build technology. I want to build an internet company. So that's what I did in college. You know, I started my first company, which was a digital advertising business. And what we were doing was we were helping digital advertisers manage their ad campaigns across Facebook, across Twitter, and across Google, all in one place. So this is the company that got into Y Combinator, and I started to build a lot of relationships, you know, with people inside of Facebook, inside of Twitter, inside of Google. And the second that I got out to Silicon Valley, I became incredibly disillusioned. So, you know, I had finally achieved this dream that I had, you know, from the time that I was, you know, in the eighth grade. I finally made it, right? You know, you get that moment where you finally, I made it. I'm here. I'm doing what I wanted to do. I'm where I wanted to be. I'm rubbing elbows with, you know, the top names in technology. This is the coolest thing ever. But that was shattered over the first couple of months that I was in the Valley. As I learned who these people were, I learned that these people did not share my values. They did not share American values. They looked down on me because I was a Christian, because I was a conservative, because I didn't think the same way that they did. So, you know, I learned very quickly to basically self-censor and keep my views to myself and keep my faith to myself and, you know, lay under the radar. And this was very, very uncomfortable for me and unnatural for me. It was not something that I enjoyed at all. So, you know, during the 2016 election, I would say my big quote unquote red pill moment was when I went to the San Jose Trump rally. And this is the infamous rally where you see this image of a woman that was egged in the face, and you see this mob of people attacking women and children and people that were coming and going into the rally. They were burning American flags outside of the rally. You know, it was very violent. It was very eye-opening to me. I had never believed that something like this could happen in the United States of America, where we have a rally for a presidential candidate, and, you know, the people are basically being attacked by domestic terrorists outside of it. And then I saw the police doing absolutely nothing. So this was a very eye-opening moment for me. And it, you know, it inspired me to finally stop being quiet, to stop shutting up, and to start speaking out, and speaking out in a very loud way. So I wrote a series of blog posts, you know, basically coming out and saying that I support Donald Trump. And from that point on, I was blacklisted. I was attacked. I was smeared. People that I considered to be close friends in the Valley disassociated with me, wanted nothing to do with me. People were calling me, you know, the usual smears. You're a racist. You're a bigot. You're an Islamophobe, yada, yada, yada. So I went through that. And this, of course, red-pilled me further. You know, so just for, you know, talking about and proclaiming my support for a presidential candidate, I was now being labeled something that I was not. I mean, God knows my heart. I know my heart. I'm none of these things. I just care about my country. I care about our citizens. I care about my freedom. I care about their freedom. So this was the second layer of the red pill moment. The first was witnessing this chaos in San Jose. And the second was the reaction to me, you know, basically you know, sharing my support for the president with the world. So, you know, immediately after this, I started to see a lot of things happen. So I was a prolific user of The Donald, which is a subreddit community on the website Reddit. I witnessed, you know, viral posts of mine stripped from the front page of Reddit dozens of times. And this was news-related posts. This wasn't just memes or anything like that. This was like breaking news. This was important stuff that was getting just totally removed from Reddit's front page and just buried. So then every post from that community stopped showing up altogether. So Reddit ended up, you know, altering their front page algorithm to remove posts from this very popular and growing community of the Donald from showing up at all on their front page, effectively, you know, leaving the Donald to its own little corner. You know, I was also on Twitter at the time, and I watched pro-Trump Twitter accounts that were being banned, including some of my favorite anonymous content creators who were helping to propel the president to the presidency. So finally, in May of 2016, I read a report that a Facebook whistleblower had come forward and had exposed that Facebook was rigging their Trending Topics product in order to bury conservative pundits and sources and information from this product that is, you know, seen by billions of people every day, and it's what they see as news. So the best problem for an entrepreneur to solve is their own, and I had one. Silicon Valley censorship was real, it was happening, and it was very obviously going to continue and to get much worse. So 4 years have gone by now, and you know, back at that point, even I couldn't have predicted how bad that this was going to get, you know, with some of the things that we're seeing today. But I, 4 years ago, I decided to do something about it, and that's when I launched Gab to the World. You know, conservatives have whined about liberal media bias for decades, but very few of them ever seem to have the will to actually do something about it. And so I did. Within the first few hours of me announcing Gab to the world, we had thousands of users and tens of thousands of people on our waiting list. And, you know, we had to have a waiting list at the time because the demand was so incredible. It blew apart my expectations even, that, you know, the technology that we had put together in about a weekend just couldn't stand the amount of traffic that we were getting. So, you know, we decided to put up this wait list, and you needed to get an invite in order to get into the site for an extended period of time. It was up until May of 2017. So we launched into private invite-only beta in August of 2016. I officially started the company a few weeks later in September of 2016, and then we didn't officially go live with open registration until I believe it was May of 2017. So, you know, we stayed in private invite-only beta for an extended period of time, and what this allowed us to do is really build a real community with real people and really listen to what people wanted and what they wanted to see us build and you know, what they were seeing in terms of censorship across other platforms. So this was a very rewarding time, this private invite-only beta time of Gab's existence. We learned a lot. We built a lot of strong connections with our users. Many of those users are still some of the most prominent and active users of Gab today, 4 years later. So, you know, again, I would experience the first taste of the dishonest, cancerous sophistry in the mainstream media after what I thought was a great and fair conversation. So I get a call from Wired magazine, and you know, this was my first foray dealing with the media. You know, we had gotten some coverage from my last company, but we really had the attention of the media with Gab, and instantly, you know, from 3 weeks of launch, within 3 weeks of us launching into private invite-only beta, you know, Wired had smeared us as the alt-right echo chamber, right? Now, I have never identified as alt-right. I identify as a Christian. I identify as a conservative. I identify as an American patriot. I've never identified as alt-right. So this characterization was, you know, applied to us, you know, from day one. And it didn't matter what we said. It didn't matter what we did. That was the narrative that the media was going to run with. So it didn't take me long to start fighting back against the media and treating them like the lying trash of fading irrelevance that they are. And I would record, you know, interviews that I would have, and I would leak those interviews before the articles would go out. I would have everything in writing via email, and I would leak those emails before the article would go out. So I started fighting back. I started punching back big time against the media, and they did not like this. But, you know, the controversy drew a lot more people to Gab, and it drew attention to Gab, which in turn brought more and more people to sign up and more people to start visiting the site. So, you know, this was a big learning experience. I refuse to have this pathetic and weak victimhood mindset. I refuse to accept the narrative that they were trying to place on us. So, you know, I fought back is basically what I did. And it wasn't easy. And it was something that I've learned a lot from, and I'm still learning from. And I hope that in this podcast that I can teach people how to fight back. And a lot of people get enamored with the media, right? So, you know, they get contacted by some big mainstream media outlet. Oh, the Wall Street Journal wants to talk to me. I feel important now. And, you know, they almost get starstruck in a way, a lot of people. And they fall right into their trap. So these people will act like your friend over email, and even on the phone when they're having a conversation with you. They present themselves as good, honest, decent people, and then they put out the article, and it's a total smear piece. It's a total, you know, agenda-driven, narrative control piece that isn't reflective of reality in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, my hope with this show is that I can expose a lot of that, and I can share our full story without having to worry about, you know, the mainstream media framing our narrative for us. So, you know, over the years, Gab has become much more than just a Twitter alternative. It's now become the Silicon Valley alternative. It's a message to the tech oligarchs. We will replace you, and the people will take back control of their data and over the flow of information on the internet. So highlighting the media smears and the no platforming that we've experienced is part of our story, but I feel like what's more important is focusing on just how much we've accomplished despite these things. So Gab has over 4.5 million people that are, you know, using our products each and every month. And that number is growing like crazy. You know, just since January of this year, it's now going to be August. Our traffic is up almost 70%, right? So we're exploding in growth right now. And people want an alternative. They're actively seeking an alternative. They are fed up with Silicon Valley censorship and with their bias and with their double standards and with their hypocrisy. And, you know, Gab is top of mind when people think of alternatives to big tech products. So it took, you know, almost 4 years for, you know, this vision that I had to come to fruition. But I think we finally have reached this breaking point where alternative technology platforms like Gab and like BitChute are really starting to take off. And I think that this is going to continue well into the future. So accomplishing what we've accomplished over the past 4 years, you know, has been nothing short of really a blessing from God. You know, I would not be here without my faith. We've been through so much. We've been doxxed and threatened and swatted and DDoSed and so much worse that I will probably get into over the next couple of episodes here. But my faith in Jesus Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit are really the sole reason that I'm personally still standing after walking into the depths of hell and back. You know, I've taken on the mainstream media. I've taken on the most powerful companies in the world in Silicon Valley. We've taken on foreign governments who, you know, demand that we hand over user data. You know, all of these things we've taken on. And the only reason that I've been able to do that and have had the strength to do that is because of my faith in Christ. So I've never been more optimistic for the future of Gab and for the future of free speech online. You know, we are the tip of the spear in this fight, and the people are fighting right alongside of us. You know, we've never had the support of, you know, mainstream players on both the left and the right. You know, a lot of people think that everyone on the right is on their side. This is just a lie. I could tell you that firsthand. And I will dive into this probably in its own dedicated episode. But, you know, a lot of the people in the conservative movement are not conservative at all, number one. And number two, they are in it for the money. That's it. They don't care about the country. They don't care about free speech. They will pay lip service to free speech and then turn the other way when someone that they don't like is banned, or you know, they will totally ignore platforms like Gab while sitting on Twitter, making them money and whining about Twitter. It's quite ironic. But we don't need the support of the establishment. The establishment is not who we are building Gab for. We are building Gab for you, for the people. And the people support us. And the people have been the backbone of Gab. And the only reason that Gab is as big as it is right now is because of normal, everyday people who are fed up. Who are fed up with the lies of the mainstream media. Who are fed up with the hypocrisy and the double standards and the censorship and the bias of Silicon Valley tyrants. And that is what is going to propel Gab well into the future. And I look forward to that. So I hope you enjoyed this first episode. It's just a taste of the start of this story. I want to get this story out there because a lot of people have no idea what we have been through and what we go through each and every day to defend free speech online for millions of people around the world and growing. So I want to share that story, and I want to have a direct line of communication with you. I don't want you to read about us from the mainstream media liars and sophists. I don't want you to read about us from political activists who have an agenda. I want you to hear our story directly from me, directly from the source. And I want to share it with you authentically and truthfully. And I hope that you appreciate what we're going through and share this story with a friend. So thanks for tuning in to episode 1 of Gab.com Radio. And remember to speak freely.